Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 166 of the Nerd Cantina Show. And we've got another Cantina conversation for you today between Megan and the author EJ Mello. EJ Mello has her recent book, Song of Forever Rains, out and available on Amazon and wherever you like to buy books these days. And in this interview, Megan talks about other stories that that EJ has written over the years, the process of writing this one, and then some pretty in-depth, spoiler-free discussions revolving around the different characters and other things that EJ has going on. I'm certain you'll enjoy this interview, so stick around.
We have got EJ Mello joining us today. Song of the Forever Rains comes out on July 1st. Recognize that it was one of the Amazon first reads, which is pretty cool. I don't know if you had done that before, but either way, you know, the book will be available by the time we get this rolling, by the time we get this out there. So thank you, EJ, so much. I really enjoyed this book. It was easy to get kind of sucked in. So I'm excited for you to come on and talk to us about, you know, everything, this the world and the process of, you know, maybe releasing a book in a pandemic and or on the tail end of a pandemic and all that. So thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, Megan. Yeah, that's awesome. I'm so happy that you enjoyed it.
Yeah. No, for sure. I really did. The characters, the sisters, of course, they just, I enjoyed their interactions so much. And we can, first, before we get to that, we can start with your background and like, because you've got a few published works under your belt. You've got another series that you wrote and finished. And so, yeah, how about we go into your background and like, maybe go into how this experience was different than that of, you know, previous experiences with publishing your stuff.
Yeah. So I have four previously published books. One is a series called the, not the Musaya series, that's a series, the Dreamland series. That's three books. And then I have a standalone action romance called The Animal Under the Fur. And those books were indie published. So it's different from this, a lot different from this experience.
Okay.
Yeah. And I can definitely get into all that if that's something we want to chat about.
Oh, no, for sure. Whatever. If you got to get something off your chest, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really, publishing is really interesting because, I mean, I'm trying to think when the first book was published in the Dreamland series, but it was really before, it was right when indie publishing was kind of taking off and when, platforms were starting to be built for authors, where authors, I guess, had more of a face and readers could meet authors before. I think, you know, there was more of a veil on who the writers were. You didn't necessarily get to, as a reader, you didn't get to approach authors as easily as we can now through, you know, TikToks and Instagram and Facebook and all that. So, and it wasn't that much out there. I think when I was researching, I didn't really know how to go about the publishing, traditional or indie. Like there wasn't a lot on it. It was all very new. So I did the traditional publishing route in the beginning. I tried that. I tried querying. I did it for a whole year with my first book. And then I just decided to publish it because I was like, I had so much belief in this book. And there wasn't really a market. I think Twilight might have just come out.
Oh, okay.
when I was trying to publish my book, so there was a lot for this young adult paranormal in the traditional publishing world. So yeah, I tried my hat at indie pubbing and it was awesome, actually. It was, I think because I have a background in, and I still do advertising, I thought marketing and marketing for myself was kind of an interesting challenge.
Sure.
Myself. Yeah. Like as a client, like how would I market this if I was just a client of mine? So I went about it that way. And the community of indie publishing is just so tight knit, so close and so supportive. Yeah. So I did my first trilogy that way. And then I wrote the standalone that way. And I was building all this traction and I was able to get, I queried an agent right after Animal Under the Fur came out and was doing well. And it's my agent now, her name's Amy Ashcraft, and she's with Brower Literary. And they do this thing called sub-rights management. I'm kind of getting into the publishing details.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm immersed enough in like the know-how a little bit just from talking to tons of authors. Like I know you know, yeah. how sophisticated it can be. So, it's totally fine. but yeah, cause I imagine like,
yeah,
you know, going from, yeah, like indie, like one style of publishing to, you know, going to this more traditional route, as you kind of saying, it's kind of like, you know, when you're starting a new series, right? There's going to be two more, I'm guessing, after this one. Like, it's a new, it's just interesting to compare. It's interesting to like, as you get more experience, maybe you branch out and you do things a little differently to see how it goes. And, you know, I personally find it interesting. So.
Yeah. And it was interesting in the sense that like when I did get my agent and I had this idea for the Musai series, she said, let's try and traditionally publish this. Let's try and, you know, query some publishers. And I was hesitant. And it was because I was so used to owning everything and doing everything myself. And indie publishing is also very fast. I'm used to like, it was like one book a year has to come out at the least, at the minimum, or like your readers would just, I don't know, ghost and disappear. So I was scared. I was like, I know traditional publishing is slow. I know it's a slog. So I had all those things in mind, and it was just interesting because I think, you know, cut back to the Dreamland series, when I first wrote it, I would have just jumped immediately, been like, yes, let's do it. Mm-hmm. But I think because I was building this platform, I just didn't know. It was this new unknown, I guess, after I had controlled everything for about 5 years, 6 years then. So yeah, it was exactly that. And then we queried Song of the Forevermains for 6 months. It was originally young adult. I didn't feel like it should be young adult. I just felt like there was just a lot more darkness I wanted to get at.
Sure.
And like sexuality within the story and the characters. So we, after a few months, we stopped, and then I rewrote it to be, you know, just regular fantasy.
Okay.
And then, yeah. And then quickly after that, we got some nibbles. And
okay.
And that's where
So it kind of like when you really went, you like more aligned with what you had intended, that's when you got like attention.
Because we kept getting feedback being like, this doesn't feel young adult. This doesn't feel young adult. And I was like, yeah, because it's not young adult. So let's not make it that. So I think it went where it needed to go, which I'm really excited about.
That's awesome. No, that's great that worked out, where you were able to just, you know, I imagine as you were used to having so much control, and then you had to like kind of step back a little bit. But then, you know, it kind of worked out where you trusted your gut, you did what you had to do, and it ended up working out for you. And I'm glad that you had like that, you know, creative control to do so after a while, because I think it was the right move for sure. Just for the genre in general. I haven't picked up your previous work. Is this the first time you're writing like the dark romance fantasy type thing?
Yeah, the first series was like a contemporary fantasy. And it wasn't as dark. I mean, the third book got kind of, you know, darker, but this is the first, I guess, high fantasy romance.
Okay.
And I've been working towards this. I knew I wanted to write a book like this for years. And I feel like my writing, I had to write those other books to get to this level, I guess, of writing this story. I mean, those taught me so much about character arcs and just world building. And I was really challenging myself to build a fantasy world in one book. I mean, I wanted to write a standalone that encompassed this world. And I think it was very challenging, but I'm really proud of, you know, what out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I kind of get that, because where it's like, you know, you kind of wrap everything up in a little bow, but it's also like, you know, just because I've been following, you know, you and the work, and I'm like, okay, well, I know the next one's going to come out. It's like, so I have more to look forward to. So I'm excited, but like, yeah, that's, you could kind of tell everything was wrapped up in a little bowl, but then you're like, kind of like, well, no, there's something over here. Like, let's explore that later.
Yeah. And it's hard. I mean, the second book was super hard for me to write, because I already knew the world and I already knew the sisters. So I was like, how am I to write this as if it's all on its own again, and I have to almost forget I wrote that other book.
Yeah.
I don't know if you read historical romance, that genre.
Not a lot. I think I kind of jump around all over the place. So
yeah. Well, I love historical romance, and something that they, I think the authors in that genre do really well is they have all those, they have a world and then they have like five books. They'll have like characters, you know, so then they'll have five books and each book is a standalone of that character. Mm. And I'm always really impressed by that. So I think for this, that's what I was trying to do. I was like, okay, well, I know I have these sisters and I know I want each book to be a sister, but let's do that in this massive fantasy world. Yeah.
So then how do you take any, like, do you kind of like, how do you get better? Do you teach yourself? Do you try to take classes? Do you read other books? Like, how, you know, what's your, is it included? Is it part of your process? Like, how does that work out for you?
Yeah, I think it's with every book. I think I'm not alone, and I'm sure, Megan, you've heard this from other authors, but I have problems reading my back catalog because I kind of cringe sometimes because I'm like, I'm very proud of every single one of them, but I can just tell, you know, with each one they get better, and I'm sure many authors feel that way about their back catalog. Mm-hmm. So I feel I get better with my craft from just writing, and yes, definitely from reading. I think reading is so important in every genre, not just your own. I hardly read fantasy, to be honest. I read like, you know, well, I do read fantasy, but I do also read like contemporary and just stuff like that because I love to see how story and craft is done in different genres. For sure. And honestly, my editor, you know, kicks my ass. So she like will, she has made me such a better writer just in the process of drafts. So yeah.
Oh no. Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's always nice. And plus you have to like kind of trust their expertise too, even if like, you don't want to get too precious about your work because it's like your baby, but it's like, well, you have to trust, you know, the industry professionals and in that particular role, especially this is their job. Like that's, they want to make, you know, they want to make it better. They're not, you know, cause then if you succeed, they succeed and it's, you know, you're a team, but it's hard. I imagine that it's hard to like, you know, if you're attached to a certain idea and maybe it doesn't come across, it's like maybe how you mean, but then that's why you get like a second or third pair of eyes on it. You know, with the whole editing process and all that. So no, that's really good that you have a good relationship and that you're, you know, that you're tough enough to accept anything that comes your way. It's like constructive criticism and whatnot. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I think it's because of advertising. I have a thicker skin about it.
Oh, because, for sure. Yeah.
You know, our creative ideas get ripped apart when you get scripts and anything like that. So sometimes to the degree where I feel like I can overly collaborate with people. So sometimes I have to remind myself, I'm like, no, this is my story and I want to tell it this way. Instead of just being like taking all the pieces. So yeah, it's such an interesting process of getting down to like the best story it can be for sure.
Yeah. So then going into that, like, since this was kind of your first time writing something a little bit darker or focusing on, or, you know, trying to aim it towards the darker side. What did you like most about this experience? And then maybe like two-part question, like what were the biggest challenges?
Of like the specific, of writing?
Of jumping into this new-ish genre for you.
Yeah. So I guess my favorite part about it was I love world building. That's like my favorite part of any book. And I do, my process is I build mood boards. So I really liked researching like images and finding, you know, how do these people dress? The Musai obviously are masked and everything in the Thief Kingdom has costumes. So I was like, what do those look like? And how, and what is the world of that? And where do they come from? So a lot of that research I enjoyed because I got to look at designers that I loved costume designers that I think do amazing things. And, you know, a lot of, you know, Crimson Peak and like just that like eerily haunted costumes I loved looking at and figuring out how that comes together. So I think that was my favorite part of this, of doing the darker world, is figuring out, you know, generally what kind of era was this in? Cause it's fantasy. So it's all, you know, it's not really, it's not based off of our world.
Sure.
But you kind of pull things from it, for the costumes and the decor and things like that. And then I think the hardest part of the book was Darius's story. I think he is a really haunted hero and what he had to go through and what he, you know, I don't want to give stuff away for those.
Sure. Yeah. Do our best to be a little spoiler free.
Yeah. But I think his story and his relationship with his stepfather and the things that he went through was the hardest thing for me to write. And it took, you know, me doing research and sensitivity readers and making sure I was doing that story justice. Cause I think it is you know, people have experienced stuff like that before. And I wanted him to also have that happy ending, you know, that other people do have. So, yeah, I think that was.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that because I did hold a special place in my heart for Darius just because of that, because like, you know, sometimes, you know, you swoon over characters and it's just like, well, yeah, of course I, you know, the first thing that Akira noticed about him was that he was annoyingly handsome or annoyingly beautiful, I think. Mm-hmm. And, but it was just like, it was more so like, you know, he was, I don't know if wounded is the right term, but he was like, he'd been through some shit and he has some like PTSD that he's not, you know, but it's a little complicated, you know, than that. And yeah. And just like, I love how the psychology, you added like the psychology, you kind of explore that a little bit to where like what his experiences like, and his knowledge, that develops from those experiences. It's like, how would that affect him? And then, yeah, you kind of like relate to Lakira in that way where it's like, where you can't, it's like, you can't help but feel sorry for him, but I don't know if it's like pity necessarily. It's just kind of like the need to help him. And it's, yeah. You're just like, feel like, oh my God, like, you know, that's why I kind of like, I felt for her. Cause she's like, I'm here and she has like magical powers and she's just like, but she has to act like she doesn't. And oh, it's, God. Super frustrating cause she could like take care of, you know, she could fix a lot of things by herself, I think. Yes. But yeah. But she had to, you know, reluctantly for her, I bet, just be very, secretive and look at the big picture and trust her father and, yeah. You know, go all about it alone. And so no, I did, I appreciated Darius's character and like, cause I think that was like one of the first times I approached a character who was like, you know, he, there are more layers to him than just like the love interest or, you know, the slow burn other end of the romance, you know? And, it was, yeah, I felt for him for sure. And I felt for Lakira who was like, you know, was like, oh, like she can't, yeah. Like, she's just sitting there like kind of like, oh gosh,
yeah,
like,
yeah, because she can be so helpful but she's so helpless.
Yeah.
And I think that the thing with Darius and his whole story, and I think for anybody who's experienced trauma, especially when they're younger, is you have, or at least from my personal experiences, I feel like you have a foggy memory of things and you start to question if things are real or not. So yeah. You know, how do you relate to that? How do you come to grips with that? And then Lakira on the other side, yes, like she wants to help, but just like anybody would want to help around someone that they can so easily give aid to, but mm-hmm. she knows she can't, because in a lot of ways they have to help, you know, they have to heal in their own time and their own way.
Sure.
So that was like a lot that I was playing with, but I mean, I'm glad that you kind of gleam some of those themes off of there, because a lot of the Song of the Barbarians and the New Sai series is about the masks we wear and what we give off and a lot of the contradictions of that, because, you know, a lot of the people that are the most beautiful in this world are the most dangerous or vice versa. And I think it's, you know, things aren't what they seem. And that's really the themes that I was trying to play with
for sure. For sure. Even if just you're brushing the surface of it, it's like, yeah, there's, you know, even if you look at like celebrities or models or other like beautiful people and you're like, oh, like life must be so easy for them. They won the lottery in terms of like looks, but then it's like they still got something that like bothers them at the end of the day. Like they got they're under some sort of stress, or like everybody's got something, like, you know, yeah. And nobody, not everybody lets up to it. Like, you know, not everybody flaunts their issues and what they're really dealing with. And, you know, that definitely came across. And it was like, I, you know, I liked how like Kira and Darius, they like grew up in such different circumstances, but they could still relate to each other so much. And they still had so much in common and still they understood each other on a certain level, like on a deeper level than I think a lot of people, or a lot of other characters anyway. And so kind of like jumping with that, there's a couple of like, you know, like two big topics we could brush over, because I think there's a bit to unpack. So I want to come back to those sisters. I read that you were inspired, like you have three sisters and that you were inspired by them. So is each sister Is each one based off of one of yours mostly? Or like, is it kind of like a general relationship, little quips, little personality tidbits, all that? How far did that go? And yeah, let's go into that. Because I really enjoyed the sisters. I enjoyed whenever they got together. I could just like see them, you know, I almost got jealous of their relationships. Like, it was awesome.
Yeah, well, that's amazing to hear. Because, yeah, so my sisters and I are really, really close to the point where when I come home, like for holidays and stuff like that, my parents still live where I lived growing up. So some of my high school friends and stuff like that will be home for the holidays. And a lot of the times we don't go out. So like my friends will be like, oh, you're going to come meet us here or there, but I just want to stay home and hang out with my sisters.
Oh,
so it's like kind of like that kind of
thing. Or it's
thing,
like, well, can my sisters come? Like,
yeah. Like if we stopped getting asked to go places, cause they know if the Mellows are together, they just kind of stay together.
Oh no.
So that's kind of where I've always wanted to write a relationship or a story about sisterhood, whether that's like friendship or literal sisterhood. And that's, I mean, when I started thinking about Song of the Fervorines, or the Musai series, it started with the Musai. It started with these three sisters because my dad and my mom are both artists, and my dad used to call us his muses. And he kind of would, you know, he'd paint each of us and do this whole thing. So I was like, oh, that's where this idea kind of started germinating and like coming up in my brain about like, okay, who are these sisters and what do they do? So each one, yes, each book is dedicated to one of them. And, you know, it's loosely based. I'm sure my youngest sister, Kelsey, who the Song of the Fervorines is dedicated to, and his younger sister, Lakira, would say that has a magical voice and does all that stuff. But no, she's, you know, it's very loosely based off of, I think, the fact that I don't know if everybody falls into these roles, but I think there is very common roles with the youngest, the middle, and the oldest of siblings.
Oh, for sure.
That's kind of where this goes. So Lakira, I think, is a little bit more, despite her powers kind of restricting her to be very poised and put together, she definitely has more of that smiley, positive personality. Mm-hmm. And then I think, you know, the middle sister, I kind of fall in the middle with my other sister, and we're the rebellious, you know, trying to get the attention because we're the middle sisters. And then there's the oldest one who's like the surrogate mother in a way and the responsible one.
Yeah, no, for sure. I definitely got that. And it makes me more excited to read, you know, to finish the series, to see like, okay, well, Lakira had her story. Now let's move on to Naya. How do you pronounce it?
Yeah, Naya.
Naya. Okay. Yeah. No, I think she was my favorite just because, you know, she's a smart ass and she's outspoken and she, you know, she doesn't really have much of a filter. And she's just very like, she's very sure of herself. And, which brought a lot of good, banter. And then also a lot of, with her, Arborisa had to kind of keep her in line a little bit. Like, did you really have to say that? Like, or the little slaps or the little pinches just being like, okay, enough. Like, really? Like,
Naya.
It was great.
Yeah. She's one of my favorite. And her second book, was so much fun to write. I mean, yes, I'm very excited for her and Alos and what happens.
Oh, yeah. I want to know what's going on there too. Even like seeing it through Darius's eyes, that's what I enjoyed too, where he was just like outside of the frame. He was outside of the big picture that, you know, because whenever you're on like Kira's point of view, you like, yeah, you know what's going on. And then it was just fun to read from Darius's point of view, where, you know, he's just like, oh, I wonder what history is going on between those two. And I'm like, yeah, me too. Like, let's see what's going on there. So I'm excited. And then that your second book, the second book of the series, is coming out later this year, right?
Yeah, in October.
Okay, cool. So we don't have to wait too long. So do you have all three of them like written out and you're just kind of like fleshing them out based on like how you're able to pace the releasing or?
The first two books, I luckily finished writing the second book pretty much when I signed my contract with Montlake. So that book was pretty much written, the second one. The third book I am still plotting and we still have, you know, to share news about that. But yeah, that one has not been written yet and I'm plotting the specifics.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah. And I imagine it might be, if it's the final, you know, installment, it might be a little like, ooh, like you gotta, there's a little more pressure, you know?
Yes.
Especially because you're hoping like you're still working on releasing this first one. So it's, yeah, no, I imagine the headspace would be a little, you know, a little antsy right now. Yeah. Regarding this.
There's a lot of things, even though it's a standalone, there's still a lot.
Yeah.
You have to button up in a way.
Oh, for sure.
For those who've read the full series. So yeah.
Yeah, no, I can't wait. I'm excited. I it just thoroughly enjoyed anytime the three of them were together. I thoroughly enjoyed reading those scenes. Yeah.
That makes me so happy.
So aside from that, we can talk about like the parallels to, you know, there's some like girl power, female empowerment, or there's like parallels to, I would say like challenges to what we typically see, cause Lakira's power is in her voice, but then like, if she doesn't control her voice, or she loses control, then she can cause damage. She could cause pain. She can, and so this, you know, her whole life, she's had to, just train and learn and, you know, going through, like just practicing how to, use her powers, both like to see what the bad that it can do and to see the good that it can do. And mm-hmm. She's just 19. So, you know, she's had to, I imagine little 10-year-old Lakira like having trouble, you know, learning how to heal someone or learning how to like, you know, target an attack or something. And, you know, that could be, you know, that theme could align with, you know, how in society, like women who speak up are, mm-hmm. you know, I like to think that we've come a long way, but unfortunately, yeah, it's just the society's perception of women who speak up are not viewed, you know, favorably, I would say.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, especially if they're disagreeing with people who are louder. And it's, you know, it's interesting how you go, you know, how you kind of go with that. But then on the other side, you, Dolian, or hopefully I'm pronouncing their father's name correctly.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, good. He just has three daughters and he, had to, you know, with the exception of his ally's son that he kind of like took in, that's mm-hmm. all he's got. And so I appreciated that. You know, on that other side of that coin, he trained his daughters to not like be damsel in distresses. He was very, you know, he wasn't super protective of them. He exposed them and he taught them things. He didn't necessarily shelter them. He raised them to hold their own, which obviously such a good idea. But it's like, yeah, you kind of go both ways with that, with her power, but then how she was raised. It's like, yeah, she's learning to control her voice because otherwise she's going to hit the fan in a very, very bad way. But then she's got it. She's got it down. She knows, and she knows how to do other things. She knows how to pickpocket. She knows how to sneak around and disguise herself. You know, she navigates, this, you know, whole like secret life and along with her sisters. And so, let's kind of like, you know, go along with that to like how, you know, you did what you set out to accomplish. It was just okay, we're going to point out some shit going on in the world today and then kind of going against that trope a little bit.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I mean, that is one of the big theses that I was trying to get at with this story is, I guess I would call it a feminist fantasy. Like that's what I wanted. I wanted women to read it and to feel empowered and also to feel connected to this. I think you completely nailed it on the head. It's the fine line we have to walk using our voice. And that's really Lakira's issue and her magic personified pretty much that. It's we can speak up and we can yell and we can do all this stuff, but we have to do it in a very specific way or we're considered shrill or we're considered bossy or we're considered, you know, I think, yes, we have come a long way, but I think we're still unfortunately put in boxes based off of our behavior and dress and look and the whole thing. So that was my commentary a bit on that with how Lakira you know, her father even understands it. I mean, he sees her power. He's like, you're extremely powerful, but you have to control your power in a certain way for it to be effective in the way you want it to be. Yeah. And I think as women, we have to do that. It's sad, but we are like that in society, right? It's if we want to be heard, we have to say it in the proper tone, in the proper way, with the proper words, or otherwise, you know, people go mute or they, you know, call us names. And
it's
stuff
just,
like that.
Yeah. Or, you know, I don't want to, because the co-hosts are men. Yeah, yeah. But you know what? It's whenever you get into literature or art of any form, that's part of it is you're like either pushing the status quo or you're trying to say something, you're trying to challenge something. And it's like, you know, we women just unfortunately right now aren't. And still are, they're not as easily forgiven for like, oh, that's just how she is. Like, no, you hear that about men, like, you know.
Yeah, and it's not just men doing it. I think women, unfortunately, do it to women too. I think it's how it is. And I mean, I'm with, you know, my husband's extremely, you know, a feminist man and that whole thing. So it's not, obviously, I'm not pointing fingers at men being like,
oh, sure. Yeah. And no,
society-wise, you know, women have to, I just think we have a tighter rope to walk to be heard.
Yeah. Yeah. We have less wiggle room. And that's what I thought was interesting about her. She just within like one of the first scenes where she just, I mean, you open the book past the prologue very well. It's just like, oh, I don't know if it's that much of a spoiler, but she has to refrain from screaming after getting very injured. And it was just like, you know, she's just like, I gotta be alone. I gotta be alone. I gotta be alone. And then she needs to let it out. She needs to find a space to let it out to where that she's not near anybody. And it's so crazy. Like I try to put myself in her shoes where it's like, you're growing up in where your powers are so like strong that if you cry, if you're upset, if you scream, like you stub your toe, I can't imagine. Like I would, I don't think I'd be able to have a dog. Like I don't
have a cat.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Well, so she's got a pretty cool bird though. But yeah, it was like, but yeah, I was just like, oh man, like that, you know, and I'm glad she gets some street cred in that regard where, because she's practiced at holding it in. And because it's like, well, you don't want to know what happens if she does, if she doesn't. Yeah. But no, I appreciated that. And I thought it was so cool that, you know, I was a single dad and he was just like, yeah, I have all girls, but you know, I imagine he taught them everything that he would have taught his son. And yes. Which I thought was very cool. And then it's just like, yeah. And then so what I definitely also want to talk about is your nonprofit. She is booked, right? So let's talk about that, like how it start, like what it's about, how you started it, how it's going.
So She's Books started with my friend Natasha Monoso, who she's kind of like in the, I guess, Bookstagram community, which is like the book community on Instagram. And that's kind of where I think a lot of people like go and they like share their favorite books and stuff like that. But it started when we were watching the Kavanaugh hearings and like most, we were feeling very angry and very helpless. And
yeah.
Instead of just kind of being online and yelling about it or reposting things, her and I both had platforms and we were like, well, I just feel like we need to do something beyond, you know, resharing people's quotes or, you know, things like that. We were like, we need to do something where we feel we can take back the power somehow and feel useful. And that's when we concepted She Is Booked, which is a literary themed fundraising organization that raises funds for women's charities and causes. So it's really simple. And I think that's what we were trying to think. We're like, what can we do that's a simple thing that other people can do that can then support women? And it started as a bookmark, and it was just a She Is Booked bookmark. And it was 100% of the profits are donated. So all you have to do is buy a bookmark and you're donating to a female led cause. And that's what we wanted to kind of help other people feel empowered when they felt very powerless in those situations.
Yeah, no, for sure. I remember after a while, it was just like, I mean, you use that frustration for good. My frustration, I was just like, I'm just going to take a break from
because it was
yeah, and I just remember being so angry and the politics of it, and it's just even now it's frustrating because it's not even, you know, without getting too political, it's just one side is going by the book and the other side does not care, and so I'm frustrated with both. It's yeah. and it's, you know, and I live in Illinois, so it's almost my opinion of political parties kind of changes based on like federal versus state. So it's like I align with a certain side's views more, but I am also frustrated with that party in my state. So I'm like, no, I get it. I like to think that I have a well-rounded, reasonable outlook as far as X concerned. But yeah, I was just like the whole Kavanaugh thing. It was gross and
heartbreaking. Yeah, I mean, it was right after the Me Too movement, and there was just, it felt, to personally, it just felt very hopeless. And I think we just didn't know what to do with that, you know? And I think, yes, we were trying to take breaks from the internet and doing all that stuff. But then at some point, I was like, I feel like we have these platforms, and what can we do to help and
for
help
sure.
others help? So that's where She's Booked came about, and we're in a little bit of a break now because I just had a baby. So we're
kind of okay. Congratulations!
Thank you. So it's paused for we sold out in December, which is amazing. And we have some new merch in the works, but right now we're a little bit on a pause, a little maternity leave, if you will. Sure. I get some stuff back in order.
That's what you gotta do. No, I had my second boy back in November, and so I.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah,
thanks. So luckily, no, I took a break from doing these too. I was like, oh, I'm going to have to like turn some down or like, you know, but luckily it was like Thanksgiving. So luckily I think around that time publishers don't know. I don't know. From what I've seen, a lot of books aren't necessarily released like in November, December, like not a lot, maybe, I don't know. It could, you know, it didn't seem like, you know, there was a lot, of inquiries going around. So do what you gotta do. Maternity leave me not just from like your full time or 9 to 5, it's from like everything. And you know, it was for sure. But that's cool. So like
intense.
That's why I'm like, I'm surprised that I can still, you know, he's like 7 months now, and I'm surprised that I can still find time to like read and do this stuff. But you know, it's important to have a solid
I'm
partner.
Very impressed.
Yeah. Well, you're like doing all this press and stuff, and you finished another book, starting a new series, so that's definitely something to pat yourself on the back for while having a newborn, for sure. Is that your
it's one of those things where you
just... go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, it's one of those things where you don't really know. It's like a fever dream, you know, you don't quite understand how it gets done when it gets done.
But that's like, so have you been writing then, like with a newborn, or like how has that affected your, you know, your writing process, or like any part of this part of your life?
Yeah, now you've hit on the emotional nerves. Yes.
Oh no.
No, it's good.
Only go as far as you feel comfortable, you know?
No, it's good. It was, I mean, I have not written since having my son in March. It's all, luckily my publisher, somehow by the writing gods, timing worked out, and I was able to finish all my deadlines for both books before my third trimester. So I was pretty much done with writing then, so I could, you know, have my third trimester being pregnant, have my kid, and then figure out how my brain worked after having a child for the first time. So I'm very much in that mode still. I'm plodding, and I'm starting to, you know, the muscle memory is coming back. I'm sure as it was for you with your, you know, after having your child in November, it's how do you do this with, you know, even less time than you had before?
Yeah. And then But then I think once you're done, like I remember I was, because I have a full-time job aside from this, and I remember like going back to work after being on leave for a couple months. I was just like, I walked in the office and I was like, okay, I kind of miss this part of my life. Like I kind of, yeah. I was happy to get back to it. You know, I think, you know, you just, you know, some women are stay-at-home moms and they're great at it. And that's beautiful. I myself never saw myself that way. And, you know, I went to school to have a career. And so I'm really glad that I've been able to make that happen. And also have a work-life balance that's working out, so far anyway, but yeah, it's like, there's that part of me that like, I know that I couldn't walk away from. It's part of like what makes me happy and what makes me like better to be there better for my children too. Cause it's like, I'm fulfilling these little, I'm filling these little holes in my life and what makes me feel useful, what makes me feel, you know, what fulfills me. And it's part of the whole. And once you've got your whole, you look out for your star player, you look out for yourself, mm-hmm. and then you take on anything. You can take on the world. You can take on your kids. You can take on everything you've got going on, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely felt that way. I think, you know, when you have a child, so much of your DNA, I think, like changes in the sense that, you know, suddenly your body is trying to keep this thing alive and like it's feeding them and your autonomy is a little bit, it's lost. I felt very, you know, right after my son was born, I was desperate to find out, like, am I still kind of the person I remember? I feel very different, but then I don't at the same time, and all these emotions. So, you know, after you get out of that postpartum fog for a second, that's when it all kind of was like, well, can I do what I love? And writing is what I love. And I was like, you know, do those abilities stick around after you?
Right.
I mean, it was a real question for me. I was like, I don't, am I going to think about books the same? I'm in the middle of this series. Am I going to still have that same like passion for it? It's just so, you know, it's so different because you're also exhausted. So you're just like, where am I going to tap into that activity? But yes, now that I think he's starting to sleep through the night, you can start sleeping. Sleep deprivation is truly a horrible experience.
Oh, God.
So
I know it.
Yeah, there's hope. And that's when I'm working. I can see myself now. I'm like, okay, I can start writing again. And you start getting back into those rhythms, like you said, like going to work and you're like, oh yes, I remember this. I remember who I am in this space.
For sure. And yeah. And I, you know, so do you think that like, you kind of mentioned that, oh, am I going to know how to do this? I'm in the middle of a series. Do you see as like maybe you're brainstorming in your head of like when you're thinking of like where you're going to take the third book? Do you notice those little different thought patterns or different creative thinking processes? And, you know, also who knows, like it would be fun to kind of compare, right? Like, you know, between the second and the third.
Yeah. I think the best way I can describe it, and I haven't obviously sat down to write right yet, but as far as plotting goes, the best way I can describe it is I don't have time to BS anymore. Like I don't have time to kind of, like, oh, I'll just go for a stroll and figure out that all that like romantic notions of writing has kind of left in a way. And I'm like, I just have to sit. It's, you know, I have to sit down and like, I have, you know, sprint writing is a thing now. And like, I have an hour and I'm not going to go, I have to light a candle and make sure everything's perfectly perfect. It's like, okay, I have an hour. Let's see how much I can like piece out in an hour.
You have a new process of getting in the zone now.
Like, yes. It's like right there. There's no meandering its way. It's just like, okay, this is business.
Oh, that is awesome. No, for me as a reader, it's easy. I'm just like, if I can have it on my Kindle, like I can get my workout in, or I could do it on my lunch break at work and find a way. And, you know, my I love getting sucked into books, but I always like to joke, like I love getting sucked into books, but my husband doesn't, like all the time. Depends. After the kids go to bed, then it's like, fine, just do whatever you want, you know?
But, yeah.
Like, because then it's like, I'm in my own little world and it's just like, honey, like, so no, I feel you where it's just like, you have to be productive. So it's definitely more challenging for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So before we wrap up here, you know, I want to just see if you can give us like an obviously spoiler free, you know, what we can expect from, Dance of the Burning Sea, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I'm like, how do I remember all these titles? Yeah.
Yeah. Dance Hard Burning Sea. Yeah. So that follows. I'm going to botch this. I was just telling someone I'm horrible at doing like pitches for
Oh, don't think of it as a pitch. No.
Yeah. So it'll be the second book, but it's a standalone, and it's going to follow Naya, the second sister, who holds the hypnotic power of dance. And she is definitely fiery, and she kind of is no bullshit like you're talking about. Like, she says what she's going to say, and it's going to follow her and her adventures with the pirate Alos and kind of the mischief they get into. And it uncovers the past that is alluded to in Song of the Fremarines and why there's tension between the two of them.
Awesome. I'm excited for that. Cause it was, you could tell right away that there was a history, and it was just like, you know, it was spicy.
If you like hate to loves and a lot of sexual tension.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then as readers, are we supposed to know or assume that they've been intimate with each other, or they haven't, or is that part of the spoiler-free fun?
I mean, you could probably allude to some past
things. Past something. Yeah.
Past
okay.
Something, yeah. Yes. All is revealed.
Yeah. Yeah. No, because it was, yeah, you know, it was like that slow, the romance between Darius and Lakira was slow burning, but it was like, I wasn't as frustrated. I was more frustrated with the fact that it took so long for them both to realize they're on the same side. It was just like, you know, Darius had an attitude. Sorry, that's my dog. obviously there were some, like, you know, Darius just had some attitude. It was just, like, really defensive and sensitive, understandably. But I was just like, oh, just be honest with each other. Like, just let him in on your secret, or just, you know, stop being so protect. I understand, but at the same time, it's like, no, like, just talk, just keep talking. Yeah. Like, yeah. You know? So, I'm looking forward to like a different kind of like, will they, won't they kind of thing.
Because in the second book, they both come from the Thief Kingdom. So they both kind of know, they understand each other's worlds. So you don't have that, I guess, miscommunication.
Sure.
And they
seem to just say what's on their mind, like, whatever. There was like a couple comments that Alos was saying that I was like, what? So I imagine the second book was a little bit more fun to write in that regard.
Yes.
You got to go there. So.
Yes. They're definitely spicy with each other. And it was, I love reading Hate to Love, and I love writing Hate to Love. So.
Oh, that's cool. No, I'm excited. But yeah, thank you so much, EJ. Okay, we got Song of the Fremarines coming out July 1st. It's a pretty quick read, I would say. It's easy to, the pacing was great. The characters, the world was not relatable per se, but I definitely enjoyed like all the characters and their interactions with each other. And, some of the scheming too kept it going for me. So I don't want to say this is only for women, but they'll see it.
Yeah.
They'll see what's going on.
Yeah. There's a lot of male reviewers on this book, which I was very happy to see. Cause I think it does have a crossover appeal for anybody who likes, high fantasy. I think you'll get that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, no, for sure. It's not like you force it down your throat, but it's like, if people who kind of like catch on to those things, it's like, it's like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's right. Thank you so much, EJ. This was such a cool little conversation. And I'll be keeping an eye out for everything else that you push out into the world.
Thank you so much. It was so fun talking.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Thank you.
And thanks for listening to this interview with Megan and EJ Mello. EJ's books are, of course, available on Amazon. And you can find links to her website, Twitter, Instagram, all of the places you can best find her and keep up with her works over at our show notes at thenerdcantina.com/show166. And then, as always, just ask that you share this with a friend, a family member, some other nerd who might enjoy the conversations that we are having here and the conversations that we're having over in our community page. With all that said, thanks again, and we'll talk to you again next week, nerds.